couple more segments with our guys at the King's Round Table. Of course, you can tell by the beautiful sounds.
How could you not like this?
Well, you probably, you rock to
this. I write to this.
I could write to this.
I could write to this.
You work
sure.
out to this?
I'll go to a gym
no.
to this, yeah.
No.
Catch me at Cal for later today. It's just
I could run.
This sounds a little more like tropical than it does like medieval.
A little ting.
Yeah,
like yeah, yeah.
A little ting.
It sounds like steel almost like drum if you like in there. Pina coladas,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I received that. See, that's feedback. That's feedback.
I like a night
that.
On a beach.
I think it's a hybrid. I think it's
is
both.
Is this just like a channel that you found, Simone,
yes.
that just remixes
yes.
wow. all songs
yes.
into?
Wow. And as soon as we get this sponsored, we'll get it real dialed
oh,
up.
Yeah.
But for
right,
right now,
yeah.
this is what we got, you guys. A little yeah. medieval songs to bring you back.
Yeah, right. a little free I, sample there.
I was over here singing the weekend one last time and almost broke Alan. In the
yeah,
middle.
No, I didn't. Yeah, I was... I was getting ready to ask a question. Is Brendan ready here? You just
no Harry Styles
song.
No Harry Styles love.
Yeah, as it was, dude.
As it was, as it was.
Where were you when One Direction broke up?
I was probably working here.
Yeah, I was hoping that the Kings could figure it out against the Mavericks, and that's what we're hoping happens against the Mavs on Friday, guys. What are the main things? Or initially, we have a whole. Other day, by the way, and I don't know if we're going to run into any Mavs around town these next couple nights, right? Just taking in the city, taking in Doco. As of right now, and I know you're probably going to put out some more content before the game happens on Friday, but what are the main adjustments besides hopefully the others missing shots for the Mavericks? What are the main adjustments that you've seen so far, just the night after, that the Kings may look to make? And that's the cool thing about this, treating it as a series versus just one-off games. What are some of the adjustments you think the Kings can look to make, if any, for Friday?
I think Domas being a little bit more aggressive. It was talked about how the bigs were playing really high up on him. And that's not how Dallas typically plays. I think there were some aspects, might have said this earlier, that Dallas just kind of caught the Kings off guard because it's not typically how they play defense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was one of them where Domas could be a little bit more aggressive. Those dribble handoffs. Have you ever seen him fake a dribble handoff? Did I say this earlier? I don't
think
I did.
You said this to me, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's more difficult than it is for Draymond because for Draymond, it's Steph and Klay coming off that everybody is following behind.
Right.
On these other guys, on De'Aaron or even Keon right now, you're going under. So that's another guy for Domas to have to get past for a fake.
Right.
But play with that a little bit, you know, or just get downhill. Get some momentum on these guys. It's Daniel Gafford, Derek Lively. Like, Domas is quicker than these guys. I think he does have a little bit of shiftiness for a big that he could get past them. And then I think these other guys just making plays, that De'Aaron and Malik being ready for what a double team is going to look like and making that simple read that might end up with a hockey assist rather than trying to force it with a skip. So for me, I think it's a lot of offensive things. And yeah, I mean, that's mainly where I focus on.
I'm looking here, as you mentioned, Domas, and I was thinking about him getting downhill, and it seemed as if he did a lot in the half court set. And one thing that I noticed, or that I'm noticing right here, is that part of Domas is he'll either get fouled or he'll get that offensive rebound and put it back up. How many offensive rebounds, and I'm talking to Frank Fax here, so he probably knows. How many offensive rebounds do you guys think that Domas had last night?
Last night? I'm going to guess maybe two.
Four.
Chris?
Me? I'll say three.
He had one.
Oh, really?
He had one, and I have no clue if he scored off of that. But that's another thing that it's not baked into the offense, but you just assume is going to happen a little bit. And the Mavs really limited that from happening. So I don't think you can game plan and say, all right, we're going to get more offensive rebounds on Friday. But it is something that is a reason you see the 11, you see the 12 points and the 11 rebounds. You're used to, I think Sabonis a couple of nights ago had about 6 or 7 offensive rebounds. So another thing that maybe you can't game plan for, but hopefully the Kings will be able to get more out of.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely, both your guys' points are big. For myself personally, I'm looking at the avenue that really, I think, hurt the Kings the most, and that was three-point shooting. Again, just how rare it is for Dallas to shoot the way they did, or any team, really. I mean, what they did against the Kings was, I don't think them shooting 56% is going to happen again. That might be a hot take. Maybe they shoot 60 and I'm wrong, whatever. But the Kings this season, when they hold opponents under 35% from three, they can keep them under that 35% mark. They're 24-6. It's an 80% winning percentage. So for a team like Dallas, who's been struggling for really over the past week and a half from three, last night was kind of an outlier. If you can get them back to that point and have more pressure on the perimeter, I think the Kings will be in a much better position to win. Yeah. But, of course, they have to make their own shots. They shot 38%. A lot of those field goal attempts kind of went, you know, wrong in the fourth and in garbage time. They, I think, were like at 45% when I started putting my head down and finishing my recap at the beginning of the fourth because the game was pretty much over. But it wasn't really a horrible offensive night for them. It just kind of the wheels came off late. And when you let a team score 132 points, it's just it's not really going to go well for you. But I'm looking at three-point defense.
I was wondering something. A number we were talking about earlier, and I think you and Alan talked about it yesterday. The Kings' second half record when they're down at halftime, 7-25.
Yeah.
What does that tell you? What does that mean? Are you reading a lot into that? I mean, obviously, they always say second half adjustments. Is that just a sign that the Kings don't make second half adjustments?
I think at the beginning of the year, they were like one of the or the worst second quarter team for a while, if I'm not mistaken.
Second quarter.
I think they were the worst second quarter team for the first half of the season. I feel like that trend's gotten better in the second half. I'd have to double check, but I think I was telling you at halftime, like if they can get the lead by the third quarter, I think they're 35-7 or something crazy like that going to the fourth. And of course, we all saw what happened.
Yeah,
but
the opposite.
But there's usually with like with games, and I was telling Brendan like the way I kind of like write things, like there's usually like a one bad quarter, like for a game to get out of control. Mm-hmm. Usually, there's those games where there's battles throughout the night, and then it comes down to last whoever has the ball last. But usually, one quarter is what determines a lot of games.
Right.
And the Kings, I think more times than not, at the beginning of the year, the second quarter was that quarter. Last year was a third period.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of like what we saw last night. It was kind of like a callback to last year, how the Kings were a very bad third quarter team. Well, we have to hope that trend doesn't continue because now when these games really matter, you want to hope that those halftime adjustments can help you, you know, change things around and put yourself in a better position to win. But I just kind of look at it as a bad first half in the second quarter. And last night, I think, was just a bad third. But will that be a trend? I don't know. I hope not. But those numbers were pretty, you know, concerning last night, but also encouraging. If the Kings have a lead going to the third now, you feel pretty good about the Kings pulling out a win, but they got to get in that spot to begin with.
It did feel like even though the wheels came off in the third, the second may have started the cracks in the armor of the Kings, because I know a lot of us said, even though they were down maybe six at halftime, five or six, it felt a lot worse. And I think that the Kings thought they were going to be able to stick to their game plan. They were going to hang around. They eventually, the Derrick Jones Juniors of the world, they were going to miss. And going into halftime, maybe they have the lead or maybe it's a tie game. And even though it was only 5-6 points, the turnovers really killed the Kings in the second quarter. And I think we felt good about them not being down worse, but they didn't feel as if, all right, if we do X, Y, and Z, we can take over. They were just hoping for misses, which didn't happen. So I do think it was the third, but I believe that their spirit may have already been broken in the second, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think end of second, start of third has been kind of something that's been talked about a little bit, how they close a half and start that third specifically. There were a couple games post All-Star break where that was really emphasized of they did that really well. So there's definitely a carryover, and I think those 2-3 minutes at the end and start of quarters, it's easy to, you know, be a little lackadaisical or not be super locked in, specifically before and after half. And those little margins just make all the difference for a team that, you know, is kind of middle of the pack when it comes to the Kings.
It has felt like, yeah, you mentioned that start of the third quarter specifically. Maybe it's just, you know, us feeling it. Maybe it's not something that's truly there, but it does feel like the energy is always really weird. Like the first 2 or 3 minutes of the third quarter, people are still kind of filing in from halftime. The energy's not quite there. And sometimes it does feel like that's the moment where, you know, yeah, maybe you're grabbing popcorn, whatever. Maybe we're downstairs chatting it up, getting the halftime hot dog. And then we'll come up and it's a completely different game than what we had left it at halftime. And so it is interesting that you notice. And that's something that I think a lot of coaches talk about is closing quarters and especially closing halves. It just hasn't felt like the Kings have really taken advantage of that all year. It felt like, you know, they've really have let go of the ropes. Sometimes it feels like that late third is usually when they make their push, but that's really the only time where you feel them kind of hunting like a time frame in the game. It's really something interesting.
Well, also, like, the game really went off the rails in the first couple minutes of the third quarter because, as you mentioned, fans falling in the seats, you know, some empty seats
Vivek's
in the crowd.
The only not one Vivek. Ever there, man. Not He's Vivek. The not only Vivek. One who's always sitting there the second halftime starts.
Well, by the time people settled into their seats after, yeah. the 9-minute mark, 8.5-minute mark, actually, I'm seeing right here, the Mavs were on a 15-3 run to start the second half.
That's
so
great.
By the time that happens, Kings are down by 12, and at that point, it really was just kind of over. The Kings never really even got within that close again. So, I think it's been rare for the Kings, though, for them, especially like in recent memory. Even like that game in Washington, like they went down big early, but they fought back and they kind of just hovered around that 8-9 point deficit for most of the night. But what we saw last night, again, the second worst or tied for the worst loss of the season. I'm not going to look at it and just kind of like freak out or anything like that. I think it really was just a matter of the Kings just got flat out beat. You can go ahead and equate it whatever you want. You can call it they were tired. You can call it that the Mavericks just had more energy. They had more talent last night. Whatever you want to call it. It just was one of those games that I look at for the 2023-24 Kings as like a true outlier. I don't think that this is indicative of what's going to continue or any trends, but everything went wrong for them last night. Even when they made the adjustment in the third quarter, that one adjustment of slowing Luka down, their offense went flat. Kyrie got just cooking, and the game was over.
Yeah. Chris and I went back and forth a little bit about Keon on Luka, or not on Luka. Well, he was on Luka, but also on Kyrie. What did you think about Keon on Kyrie? I felt like it was a little bit of a welcome to the league moment, and Chris had kind of talked about how, honestly, it felt like Kyrie had to open his bag a little bit, which is a good sign that Keon, he was maybe a little bit, I don't know if surprised is the right word, but felt as if he had to come correct against somebody like Keon Ellis.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't look because it was already over, and I may have went downstairs with Frankie about 2 minutes left, but I'd be interested to see what the post-game interaction between them sort of looked like.
Yeah, yeah.
I do think that Keon made him work a little bit, and there were some rookie moments. And
yes.
Keon's a second-year guy, but first time really getting extended minutes in the NBA. Wasn't really playing, primarily just with Stockton last year. Mm-hmm. So, I think a lot of the mistakes we've seen from Keon are typical rookie stuff. You look at the Jalen Brunson screen, where mm-hmm. Looked for a screen coming, got totally blown by the end of the game. There's 2-3 plays against Kyrie that were probably Keon's going to be on a highlight reel somewhere.
Yes.
And so I think, but they're typical rookie mistakes. He made them work. I think they did an okay job on Kyrie. I know he had a big second half. It was more Luka to me where I was like, I don't know how to do anything about this.
He set the tone, and Luka's going to chuck up the threes. And when they go in, that just opens up the whole game plan or destroys the game plan for the defense. That's basically what De'Aaron talked about in the post game as well. One more segment with our Sactown Sports Kings insiders. When we return, how to attack Luka when he's on defense. Styles and Watkins, Sactown Sports. Let me start here, fellas. One more segment with the Sactown Sports Kings insiders. Frankie Cardicelli and Brendan Nunez. Let me start here. And these are the sweet sounds of a medieval...
Usher.
Yeah, Usher. Simone's played this one before.
Sir Usher.
I have.
Yeah, I never... Awesome. I've this one has been ingrained in my brain since the first time I heard it.
A little more piccolo.
You need the piccolo.
Are you a piccolo guy?
Huge.
Okay.
The biggest.
Okay.
Piccolo guy.
Which piccolo?
The instrument.
Okay.
What? Oh, there's a Dragon Ball.
What do you
mean?
I was thinking Dragon Ball Z.
Dragon Ball Z. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm
I was
not,
a little confused too.
Sorry,
like,
De'Aaron Fox. If you heard that, would be very upset.
No, we're on air. Right?
I'm not a Dragon Ball Z guy. I don't know anything about Dragon Ball. I watched a little bit of it.
Fair enough.
Frankie Fact, right?
I'll brush up on it.
You do know a lot about the game of basketball, and you have Luka Doncic, who, guys, do we know what in the world, and we can kind of use this as an injury update. I don't know if anything's come out yet, but what in the world is going on with Luka's Achilles? Chris and I spent plenty of time trying to figure out what happened with Luka's Achilles from the night before. And then he comes out, he plays, he had to play 41 minutes. He's clearly hobbling, right, throughout the game. Is that something, and I know we're not doctors here, but do we think that's something that's going to feel better? They do get 2 nights, but is it something that's going to feel better? I mean, I know they wouldn't risk Luka like this, but I don't, you know, me personally, I'm still rehabbing, coming back from an Achilles.
You tell us, man.
I mean, I never had a warning shot, though. My thing just went pop, pop. It was just done. So I don't know how it feels to and I think Anthony Davis has dealt with this in the past. Giannis, I thought Giannis was done, and Giannis came back like two or three games later. I don't know what to make of it. All I know is I don't understand how you are the Mavericks in a season where you're probably not going to do too much, watching your franchise guy hobble around on an Achilles, though.
I mean,
an Achilles.
I'm not a doctor. Grandpa is, but that doesn't mean I know anything. but I'll give you my best shot is I'd imagine with a franchise player, a guy like that who's an MVP candidate, they probably had imaging done. Mm-hmm. I'd imagine that they saw that he can't, you know, I don't think it's in danger of
tearing. It's just sore.
He might have like a tendonitis, something like that's kind of just a nagging injury that he can't really deal with for the offseason. And this is kind of what Luka does, though. Every year he's kind of dealing with something. Like, he's kind of laboring going into the postseason, dealing with an injury. I think it was it last year or the year before he had a bad ankle sprain, like, on the next to last game of the year in New Orleans. I can't remember if that was last year or the year before, but I'd imagine they're just kind of letting him go. And I don't know if you guys saw, I don't know if he was on the floor for layup lines or for stretching, but he was not on the bench for pregame introductions. He was not on the floor for the anthem. So he might be getting worked on just behind the scenes.
Wow. He was in the layup line.
Well, he wasn't on the bench for any. I think he might have gone back to get maybe last second work. I don't know. But he wasn't out there for the anthem or for starting introduction. So I'm not sure what they do with that. It's probably a per case basis, but I'd imagine they've done the necessary, you know, imaging, all that. Otherwise, they wouldn't roll him out there if he was on the verge of tearing his Achilles.
And I'm fairly sure it'll feel better on Friday. It's definitely going to feel better than it probably did yesterday, which was another reason it would have been really nice for the Kings to get it done with Luka being on the court. And whether he's 100% or not, he never plays 100% on the defensive end. From what you saw last night, how can you – was that a shot fire?
A little shot fire. Yeah.
I mean, am I –
just a little bit.
Where's the lie?
He was on one of those – what was it? Keegan was on one of those graphics for – I think it was – defensive. I can't remember what stat
it
was.
ISO defenders.
Yeah, and Luka was on there, and someone. Yeah. I think Carmichael Dave, was like, "Well, I guess we can't take this stat seriously."
It was a very old
because Luka's on here.
Yeah. What do you think the Kings can do? It did not feel like the Kings were able to expose Luka defensively last night. How do they do that? Chris and I went back and forth with Keegan, and also with Keegan maybe not taking advantage of it. I saw Luka a lot, essentially playing Rover on the baseline between Keon and Harrison Barnes. Do you just need to make your shots? I mean, Luka, I think, did a good job of feeding whoever was trying to drive into Derek Lively or whoever it was. But I think the idea of expose that man, and I was doing it too, right, on Twitter, is almost easier said than done. To be fair, they're used to teams trying to expose Luka on the defensive end.
They are, and I think that the two things you pointed out are what I was going to go to as well, is that there's an aspect of, like, Keegan just needs to be more aggressive. Mm-hmm. Keegan needs to we've talked about it plenty, but that specifically, when you have that matchup on you, and visually you can tell this dude is injured. He's hobbling around very clearly. Then go at him. And the flow of their offense, it's like, sure, you can try to drop a play for him here and there, but for the most part, it's like you just need to go and get it. Mm-hmm. You need to be aggressive and stop being willing to play second fiddle, sort of thing. Take over this possession. And so I think there is that aspect. I think the zone that you mentioned as well. But I think kind of like the bigger thing that I'm starting to question as we've been having this conversation is, like, how much are they missing Kevin Huerter on offense right now? Mm-hmm. You know, is that Keegan Murray, by the way, should not be someone you can hide a player on, but it has been throughout the course of this season, which doesn't make sense to me. But then now you also have Keon Ellis. And Kevin Huerter used to be the guy where it's like, okay, we'll probably put Kyrie on him, we'll probably put Steph on him, and like, or Duncan Robinson, like, just chase him around screens. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not easy. Right. You know, how tired is Kyrie in the second half is if he's been chasing around Kevin Huerter in the first half?
Right.
You know, so I think there's an interesting aspect here, but I think that for the most part, it's that Keegan needs to, if that's the specific matchup, which it was for most that first half, is that Keegan needs to just be more aggressive.
I'm looking at it here, man, and I went off on it earlier, and I'm even more upset. Luka, in terms of defensive field goal attempts, is the fourth most non-center defensive field goal attempts in the NBA. Every single team has the game plan of attack Luka I don't care how you have to do it, do it. And the fact that I'm looking at last night and the Kings only attack him 10 times, I just don't see how that's acceptable. I don't see how that's not one of the first things on your game plan is I don't care if it's Keegan. I don't care. Just figure out how to get him switched onto a defender and just attack regardless. I think that it's shown that he, throughout this season, 48% team shoot on Luka when guarded by Luka Doncic. I'm taking those numbers every single time. I just don't really see how that wasn't part of the Kings' game plan. 55% allowed on two-point field goal attempts. It just, to me, seems like Luka is the, you know, everything we used to say about, oh, you know, other teams just attacking Kevin Huerter. Oh, my God, they're getting Kevin Huerter into these isolation situations and just attacking until Kevin Huerter gets off the floor. Do that with Luka. Make Luka's offense a necessity to keep him on the floor because he should be just an absolute turnstile on defense, and he has been all year long.
They're going to have to do something. What you got, Frankie?
Nothing. I'm just saying, like, I agree. I'm looking at the defensive matchups, and the most of the Kings players scored on Luka last night was 5 points, and that just, to me, maybe we see more of the things we saw against Kevin Huerter, like, earlier in the season as far as teams seeking the switches. Maybe the Kings look to try to switch Fox on Luka. I think that Fox, last night, he only scored 2 points on Luka. He took two shots, made one of them. I feel like I remember the possession, too. I mean, Fox is just that quickness. There's no chance Luka's going to be able to keep up with him off the dribble. So
no.
And they don't really have – I mean, Lively is a shot blocker in the paint, so once Fox gets past Luka, it's the next line of defense is who's waiting in the paint. Is it P.J. Washington? Is it Derek Lively? I think that De'Aaron Fox can take his chances on that, but I think searching for switches a little more and trying to target him a little more, maybe we see that tomorrow on Friday. But, yeah, I mean, I am a little perplexed by the fact they did not really target him at all.
That flow offense, got to let it come to you. Doesn't matter what the matchups are. Well, I don't know if that's going to work in the playoffs, but you got to get to the playoffs first. And that all starts on Friday. Thank you so much, Frankie Cardicelli, Brandon Nunez. Be sure to catch them on SacktownSports.com and on these here airwaves and their social media on Twitter, or as Brendan refers to it, as X.
Don't.
When okay. We return, continuing the conversation about the Kings, also a NCAA women's basketball player getting offered the bag to play somewhere else other than the WNBA. Stiles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Speaking of Achilles, kind of a random story that came out yesterday in the media availability. Dre Greenlaw wasn't the only 49er to tear his Achilles during the Super Bowl.
What?
Kyle Shanahan said yesterday secondary coach Daniel Bullocks did the same thing, celebrating Jair Brown's interception on the first drive of the second half. He stayed on the sideline for the entire game. I can tell you right now, that was probably incredibly painful.
Yeah, wait, what?
So he, and that was, we can look up how old Daniel Bullocks is. I mean, after 30, man, it gets a little squirrely out in these streets. And he jumped up, and that's crazy. I mean, I've heard horror stories.
41 years old.
Oh, man. I've heard horror stories.
It's probably the worst.
Playing with your kids, just not doing. Because that's the worst part about tearing your Achilles for me is that people assume you're doing things that you shouldn't be doing at a certain age, as if you're going crazy. And it's almost embarrassing because that's not the case. They think I'm trying to still be.
Right.
Allen LeBron Iverson James or whoever. I'm just trying to get a nice run in. Yeah. It goes pop goes the weasel. People are like, man,
that's, you got to slow down, that, man.
Have you ever shared what happened to you and your injury, or you haven't shared that on air?
I don't know if I shared it on air. I mean, I know Chris knows. It was very simple. A nice Saturday morning, you know, playing out in Alameda, or as it was known when I was out there, Alameda. And it was a broken play, kind of a fast break, and I'm trying to get – to my left-hand side before the rest of the defense gets there, and I step down with my left, I dribble, and it was the weirdest feeling ever. And I just remember closing my eyes saying this did not happen. Because at this time, baby Styles, like 2 months. I mean, this is terrible timing, awful timing. And I just remember saying, it didn't happen. It didn't. There's no way this happened. There's no way this happened. Called my pops, who did it back in the early 2000s, and he's describing it to me, and I'm just thinking,
that's exactly what happened.
The worst part was when I did it, It was the classic look back, right? Because there were two courts.
Yeah, everybody always says it feels like somebody steps on the back of your
foot. There was two courts. I thought there was a ball on the court. There was no ball. And I'm looking around just trying to figure out what, because I'm thinking there's just no way.
Yeah.
And a guy
it's
comes
shock.
A guy comes over and he says, I'm not to get too graphic here, but he says, I heard it.
Gotcha.
I heard it.
Gotcha.
And I still thought maybe it's just partially. Maybe I just strained it. Are you sure? Maybe someone had bubble wrap or something. Right. I don't know. And yeah, it's the weirdest sensation because your body. Kobe shot those free throws.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I could see how he was able to do that, but about an hour, 2.5 hours later, it was terrible.
Yeah.
And it's weird because your mind is telling, hey, arch, you're walking. You're walking.
Right.
Arch your foot. And it's snapped, so you can't.
Right.
It's just not.
Yeah.
It said, hey, buddy, wow. We're not connected anymore. Yeah. And then I went in and they said, I don't even need to, because it's called the Thompson test, where they squeeze. I had my wife do it, and my leg didn't move at all. And I said, well,
you're not squeezing.
Maybe can you squeeze one more time? And then I went in about a day or two later, because I did it on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Go in, and the doctor said, I don't need to do the test. Just to wait. When do you want me to schedule your surgery? And I got it Wednesday, and that's all she wrote.
Yeah, that's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote. You know. So, yeah, Daniel Bullock's. Get well soon, man.
We feel your sympathy, man.
Get well soon, Kyle Shanahan. Yes, says that that a coach. There were two torn Achilles.
That's crazy.
That's
one
really
loss.
Insightful. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
One loss, two torn Achilles there at the Super Bowl. And I saw Jed York also was talking about not being ashamed of the lack of success that they've had in Super Bowls. I don't think there's anything to be ashamed about.
No.
Just getting there. I mean, think about all the teams that haven't even got there.
Yes,
so
I can do that.
Yeah, we'll have more on the Niners tomorrow as things start to come out about Brandon Ayuk. Hopefully, there will be some good news for the Niners fans out there as it pertains to Brandon Ayuk and the Niners. Also, Brock Purdy spoke with the women's basketball team.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this much. You talk about athlete speak, and you know, Niner fans are, this is why he was a captain in the second year. It wasn't a bad speech at all. It was just everything that you've ever heard before.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what you would have thought Brock Purdy would say.
It's like if you were to put ChatGPT and say, like, can you write a Drew Brees pregame speech or something?
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
It,
so
it was good. It was fine. He hit all the right notes.
And they had already lost the game, right?
Exactly,
he was just saying how proud. So it wasn't a bump up speech.
Exactly,
it was be proud of yourself speech. So shout out to Brock Purdy for holding it down for Iowa State and those Cyclones. Speaking of college basketball, this just broke today. And I guess TMZ's been real busy. Okay, with everything that they have been able everything that they've been able to grab. They've been working overtime. So they broke something that I guess Ice Cube was trying to keep under wraps. And Ice Cube is offering Caitlin Clark $5 million to play in the Big Three League. The deal is for 8 regular season games and 2 playoff games. I would assume at least 2 playoff games if they win or not. And according to Ice Cube, he came out and said, this wasn't supposed to break, but now that it did, Caitlin should be able to play and also play in the WNBA. Chris and I were trying to figure out what comes first. My assumption or our assumption is that the Big Three would be after the WNBA, I would assume. But Caitlin, I mean, $5 million. I saw Chris, and you would know the numbers better than me, but Caitlin's looking at about $75,000. To play in the WNBA. Maybe she'd make a little bit more than that, but it wouldn't be anything close to $5 million. I don't know if there's any way she can afford to say no, no pun intended.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. It looks like the Big Three season starts in June 15th at Oracle Arena. I'm sorry, it just says Oakland Arena. I assume that's Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if – I think that would conflict a little bit with the WNBA
schedule. Here you go.
Schedule.
Here you go. I got you. The first game for WNBA starts May 14th.
Yeah, so
– I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know if she would be able to do both. It does – it's probably more likely if it's going to be – towards the end of the season. But even then, it's looking like, the season is going to begin May 14th, and it's going to end September 19th. So I just don't think it's going to happen.
You don't think it's going to happen?
I don't think so. I think it's a good opportunity for her, but at the end of the day, like, you know, I don't think she's going to be able to make it work. Maybe she can do some. I don't know how long the Big Three runs for. It looks like it runs through August. I don't think she's going to have time with, you know, her actual career going on.
Well, that begs the question.
Should she do the Big Three instead of the WNBA? No.
What about 1 year?
No.
Get you $5 million.
No.
She and then you do it retired. Next year. You're turning down $5 million over $75K?
Yeah, I think it's bigger for her to join the WNBA than to join the Big Three.
Do you think that based on endorsements from being in the WNBA?
Yeah, and also just like, I mean, her legacy, like at some point it is a legacy conversation where like she's trying to, like if she is part of the thing that elevates the WNBA to another level, like, bless the Big Three, but the Big Three is not going to turn into anything else. I think it's a much bigger career opportunity for her. She's going to get a lot more sponsors if she plays for the WNBA. Then, yeah, the $5 million will probably make up for all of the endorsements that she's going to get outside of the game. But even then, I feel like she's probably going to make a lot more than $5 million in endorsements once she's in the W.
Do you think the WNBA will feel, for lack of a better term, pressured to talk to Caitlin? And I guess her agent is basically going to say, all right, well, if she turns this down, it gives her incredible leverage.
Great leverage, yeah.
Because any partners with the WNBA are going to have to throw her a bag to say, hey, we got to make sure that you are in the WNBA.
Yeah.
NBA. So either way, it's a great look for Caitlin Clark.
Yeah. I'm sure State Farm's going to up that budget.
They're going to have to. Yeah. Sorry, Jake.
Yeah.
Caitlin might have to be doing both.
Jake was
here
at that game, remember?
Jake was at the
That's
game.
Right.
Jake was at the game. Jake looks like he could hoop to me.
I honestly, I'm so out on, we can make, this is a summer conversation, but like, new Jake from State Farm, I don't know why. We had this
whole bug you?
Bobby Althoff conversation, not us, but like, internet had this whole Bobby Althoff industry plan.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about the fact that this man, Jake from State Farm, literally just plopped up randomly. He was a replacement for the original Jake from State Farm. And now he's like popping up at sporting events, at like Rick Rubin white parties and stuff. And it's like,
what's the problem?
He's Jake from State Farm. Like, you don't see Flo out here just randomly.
Yeah, I wish I would.
Games. No.
I wish I would.
It's so weird. It's the weirdest thing on the world.
He was at my BravoCon, too, in Las Vegas.
Why?
Maybe they're two.
Why?
Maybe they're more
is
than one Jake.
Is he actually a person? Or is he just
start
AI?
Start the tinfoil hats now.
Yeah.
Right? All right. When we return, back to King's Talk. Also, how many Jakes really exist? 1,000 Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Couple rumors going around with the NFL draft close by. And Chris, this is a surprise, and we can go very, very high level here because I hate to surprise you. But all I'll say is this on Caleb Williams.
Okay.
This is all I will say. It is hilarious to me that certain fans are saying that they couldn't rock with this guy because of the nail polish and the pink phone, when we know for a fact that if you were a Bears fan, we've seen you go to bat for all walks of life if they wear your jersey. Mm. So it's just funny to me that just in this situation, I saw Niner fans do it because Niner fans have their guy in Brock Purdy. It's just hilarious to me that because it's a situation that you're not in, you're saying that. I'm not going to get into how you should feel about it or anything like that, but it's funny to me that they can sit there and pretend as if, oh man, I couldn't rock with that.
Couldn't be my QB.
Couldn't be my, just because you're not in that situation.
Right.
But if you were, like, can we actually hear from Bears fans on this?
Right.
Because you saying that as a non-Bears fan means nothing. Absolutely nothing to
completely
me.
Nothing. Yeah, mm-mm. No, I completely agree with you. It does feel like everybody's got an opinion, but I guarantee you ask anybody in Chicago, they don't care. I would hope not. I would hope not.
There's probably a couple.
You got something really, really wrong with you if those, if painting nails and pink phones and crying in the stands, if that's going to prevent you from drafting a potential Patrick Mahomes, like, what are we talking about? You're really going to let your pride get in the way of that? Like, come on. That's that's being ridiculous. And, you know, I'm not going to get into, you know, how you should feel. I'll tell you that you shouldn't care. I'll tell you that. But I'm not going to get into it a ton. But, yeah, I mean, you know, for, if you're a Bears fan, you should be rooting for the best quarterback for your team. I you know, there's, of course, certain things that are not okay to believe in and you know, have, you know, there's definitely lines that you can cross. Caleb Williams has not even been near crossing any of those lines. You should be rooting for the best quarterback to be on your team. And to me, it sounds like Caleb Williams, from I've started to get into this draft here, you know, it's been known that the Vikings are definitely looking to move up in these quarterback spots. It to me seems like Caleb Williams is the guy who, you know, say what you will about, you know, is he really Patrick Mahomes?
Maybe not,
but it feels like he's the guy who has, at the very least, the least questions about him, because I've heard tons of questions about Drake May. I've heard tons of questions about Jaden Daniels, and, you know, we can talk all day about J.J. McCarthy and his questions. You know, Caleb Williams.
Great pro day.
He can really spin that thing. But, yeah, I mean, he's a winner, J.J. McCarthy.
Yep.
But, yeah, from the Caleb Williams front, I mean, if you're really letting those other things get in the way of taking him at number one, man, you're not paying attention to the right stuff.
Yeah, and it's just how people will feel that a quarterback or whoever is a representation of them when you're not him. Even if you were on the team, you could say, well, you are not the quarterback. You are not Caleb Williams. So from a fan's perspective, you have, if that's a representation, or if you're feeling like that's represented to you, let me tell you this much. As an NFL fan, I can almost guarantee you've been represented by worse.
Yeah.
If that's how you feel.
I've got a lot more problems with Kyrie Irving being on my team than Caleb Williams.
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to have a lot more questions about, hey, are we sure we want to bring in this guy that's, you know, thinking that the earth is, or questioning even if the earth is flat, and, you know, all the other the stuff during the COVID times and him sitting time out and, you know, maybe going to a party when he shouldn't have gone to a party and all that stuff. Those are a lot more legitimate and concerning reasons to not want somebody on your team than anything Caleb Williams has done.
You know what? And it does tie back into the media thing as we bring it all back to De'Aaron Fox and they don't give a bleep, because it is funny, and life is, and a lot of people use life as a buffet, but it is funny how, oh, well, we just care about what he does on the court or on the field in certain situations that you want to rock with them or agree with them. But when you don't agree with them, now all of a sudden it matters what they do off the court or off the field. So we couldn't let that one get by without speaking to it. We're also not going to let Major League Baseball opening day go by. Now, I will say this, okay? I will do this on my own. I did it last season. It didn't work out for me. But Prop Talk, you can do full seasons. So you can
see
if you think Luis Matos going to have over 20 home runs, whatever it is. So I might have to cook a little bit later today before the season starts, but I'm going to start here with the Giants. I saw them they set the over-under for the A's at 57.
57.
And a half, I'm sure.
I think they won 50 last year.
57 and a half.
Big improvement.
I like some of the guys that the A's have.
Sure.
You know, I like Zach Geloff. I really like J.D. Davis. I'm happy that he's going to get an opportunity to play third base every day, so I'm hoping the best for the A's, and I'm gonna be optimistic and say 60 wins. I know.
Sure.
I'm gonna say 60 wins for the A's, so I'm gonna say over 57.5. And for the Giants, I know last night in the media room, somebody said 93.
I thought it was 97.
93 or 97 wins.
It was a lot of wins.
I'm a pretty optimistic Giants fan, and I'm going 89.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's enough to get into the wild card. That's all I hope.
Right.
That's all I hope.
And I think that's how many the Diamondbacks won last year, or somewhere around. I don't think they had many more over 90, if they even reached 90. you know, and that feels like, you know, that would be a good season for the Giants.
They were 84 and 78.
Wow, so even worse. So, yeah, I mean, you would think that they'd be able to get in there. And, you know, they've definitely made the necessary moves to at least improve their record somewhat. It's going to be really a question of when their staff gets healthy, too. I mean, when does Robbie Ray come back? It sounds like most people are thinking that the All-Star break's going to be that target. Mm-hmm. Does he maybe come back sooner? Is that maybe a little bit optimistic in viewing it? We've seen your boy Jordan Hicks the other day had 10 Ks.
10 Ks. Come on. Take a shower. You're filthy. That's what he was doing.
10 Ks in 5 innings. So, you know, if he's going to be a legitimate thing for the Giants this year, like that's probably going to go a little bit of a way. And it feels like that would be kind of a bit of found money for them. So who knows, man? I'm not going to say that, you know, 90, I think 97's a little bit high, especially considering where they were at last year. But it feels like 90 is definitely doable. And if things go the right way, who knows? Maybe they can really inch more towards the 95 and maybe even 97. 100 feels like it's not going to happen.
Will Jorge Soler finally eclipse the 30 home runs that one has done since Barry Bonds?
Please.
But you got championships.
It could be Chapman, too.
You know, it could be Luis Matos. It's looking like Marco Luciano will be kicking it with us out here in Sacramento, which I am not extreme. I'm upset about it. From a Giants fan standpoint, as far as moving forward, Nick Ahmed, we kind of know what he is. Yeah. But as far as me personally and being able to watch somebody who's going to be really good for this team for years to come at a premium position, I am excited to see Marco Luciano and that beautiful weather, Sutter Health, and the River Cats. That's just an A1 organization over there.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. And Kyle Draper knows what he's doing along with Jay as the Drive guys take you all the way home. They're up next. Don't move a muscle. Until tomorrow, thank you for listening to Styles and Watkins. And thank you to Frankie Carticelli and Brandon Nunes, Sacktown Sports Kings Insiders. Until tomorrow, secure the bag, light the beam.